Today's program is about conservatives. And I have named this program after a Jewish practice of long standing. It is entitled Betting on Both Horses. The conservative movement can basically be broken into two factions, paleo and neo. The paleo conservatives think themselves to be the representatives of true conservatism. For them, cultural and social issues generally take precedence over economics. And admittedly, they hew much closer to what we might think of as traditional conservatism, which was represented in the past by such notables as Senator Robert Taft, and today by persons like Pat Buchanan, in addition to certain elements of conservative Christianity. This is what might be properly designated as the right wing. The neoconservatives, on the other hand, are regarded by the paleos as the new or liberal conservatives, many of them former liberals interested in preserving the status quo of post-Franklin Roosevelt America, or those that abide by liberal doctrines in all fields except economics. Neoconservatives like Rush Limbaugh, Newt Gingrich, and William Bennett are the representatives of this faction. And for anyone who takes the time to listen to these people, it is obvious that economics is usually at the forefront of their thinking and is the filter through which they judge most issues. The differences between the neos and the paleos become more marked the closer one approaches the touchstone issue of race. Neoconservatives are, for the most part, in total agreement with the liberal left on such things as racial differences, race mixing, and immigration. To them, there are no significant intellectual or behavioral differences between blacks and whites. And although they sometimes decry multiculturalism, their opposition is based mostly upon the premise that multiculturalism causes dissension among the races. Ideally, to their minds, the greatest social progress will occur when all racial awareness is extinguished. Rush Limbaugh was rubbing our faces in it when he held his marriage ceremony at the racially mixed household of black Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and his white wife. The neocons have no aversion to interracial marriages or non-white immigration. For them, what created America and made it great had nothing whatsoever to do with the race of its founders and majority population. To them, and to the Reds and liberals alike, the fact that America was founded by white people and based upon white European traditions and culture is just a coincidence and certainly nothing we should waste time dwelling on. The neocons insist that America's success was due to the free enterprise system and the absence of an overt class system. The paleos, most of them scared to death of being called racists, often stress the idea that culture is the determining force in all societies. But when pushed to the wall, they probably will admit that race had something to do with the creation of much that was good in America. On occasion, a few paleos are forthright in their ideas on racial matters. For example, many of them reject the policies that spewed forth from the Warren Supreme Court, which invalidated hundreds of long-standing laws protecting white racial integrity. And a few paleoconservatives will admit this. Dr. Samuel Francis is a noted paleoconservative spokesman and former editor of the conservative Washington Times. Francis is a sometimes spokesman for an organization calling itself American Renaissance. In a recent American Renaissance newsletter, Francis wrote, quote, "Whites must correct the political and legal order to end the political power of non-white minorities and their white, anti-white allies. This political effort would involve a radical dismantling of all affirmative action and civil rights legislation, as well as a good part of the federal superstructure that entrenches minority power." Close quote. Now, Francis is probably one of the more outspoken figures in the paleoconservative movement when it comes to racial matters, but it is significant to note that he has been reported to be a close associate of presidential candidate Pat Buchanan, in addition to being one of Buchanan's idea men. As a consequence of this article by Francis, the Washington Times finally bowed to the screams of the politically correct censors and promptly fired him. But don't think for a minute that those making a din were exclusively the screaming meanies of the liberal left. No, a number of prominent neoconservatives were in the forefront of the crusade to destroy Francis. Prominent among these neocons was Linda Chavez, non-white immigration apologist and president of the Center for Equal Opportunity, who was bitterly outraged that Francis would have the nerve to utter such politically incorrect thoughts. Chavez helped spearhead the campaign to destroy him. Now, mind you, Francis's essay was not published in the newspaper of which he was an editor, but in a small circulation newsletter. Still, Chavez and others like her simply cannot tolerate anyone expressing what she contemptuously referred to as filth, even in such a relatively obscure venue. In Dr. Francis's rebuttal to her attacks, he correctly assessed the mindset shared not only by those that pride themselves in adhering to the tenets of liberalism, but also the crypto-liberal neoconservatives that share so much of the former's ideology. He wrote, quote, "That mentality, neoconservatism, is so narrowly constricted to its own assumptions, values, and beliefs that it finds it impossible to give any benefit of the doubt to those who dissent from it. Most conservatives are familiar with this mentality, if not from first-hand observation, then at least from the results of its blustering course through history in such windbags as Cromwell, Robespierre, John Brown, and the abolitionists. Chavez and her brood are well met in their company." Close quote. Now, as far as it goes, Francis and the publications that support him would appear to be courageous spokesmen for white people, and I suppose in their minds they believe themselves to be just that. And they obviously are courageous. However, there is still one topic on which they maintain a hands-off position: the Jewish question. In the article, "Whither the Populist Wave," that appeared in the July 1996 issue of a paleo publication, Chronicles, its Jewish author Paul Gottfried revealed a relatively unknown fact concerning presidential candidate Patrick Buchanan. In an ostensible defense of Buchanan, he wrote, quote, "Despite his abrasive remarks about AIPAC, a branch of the powerful Israeli lobby, in 1991, Buchanan is not an anti-Semite. About half of his inner circle, which includes a Hasidic rabbi, is Jewish, and his praise for the present Israeli government is even more extravagant than was his criticism of the former Likud regime." Close quote. In 1993, it was disclosed that approximately 57% of Bill Clinton's appointments were Jewish. Considering that Jews make up only about 3% of the total U.S. population, that figure seemed truly astounding. However shocking that might be, however, it is much more surprising and disturbing when a man like Pat Buchanan, thought by many to be a defender of Western civilization, if not the white race, having Jews comprise 50% of not just his occasional advisors, acquaintances, or campaign workers, but of his inner circle, his confidential advisors, speechwriters, and political consultants. Now, many aware people might not be surprised if they were told that Buchanan had a Jew or two among his associates. One might even convince oneself that Buchanan might think such a thing wise so as to deflect charges of anti-Semitism. But we're not talking about one or two, but instead the disconcerting discovery that Jews constitute 50% of his closest advisors. Now first, as much as we may sympathize with Buchanan's independence from the New World Order gang and the Jewish establishment, we must remember that he is not a racial patriot. He was one of the first Republicans to denounce David Duke for his racial opinions when Duke was garnering huge support among white Louisianans. Buchanan was a functionary of the Nixon administration when that administration was busing little white children into ghetto hells, and we have no evidence that he used his position to do anything about it assuming that Gottfried is not exaggerating. His revelation may actually be good news in a way. For decades, the Jews have rarely failed to attack and suppress any candidate that espoused anything remotely resembling nationalism, and especially one that was tinged with white racial undertones. What this revelation of Jewish penetration into Buchanan's inner circle really tells us is that these ideas, nationalism, both economic and social, are ideas whose time has come, and the Jews are very concerned, concerned enough to infiltrate some of the most prominent of these movements. Now there are those who will say to me, can't you accept that there are at least some Jews not engaging in or supporting activities which are detrimental to America and white people? Yes. I can accept that there are Jews who are not anti-white crusaders, destructive media moguls, or Marxist subversives. I know Jews who don't support many of these destructive activities. Jews, especially non-influential ones, live in many of the same neighborhoods that we do, and have also become victims of the non-white violence that organized Jewry has unceasingly fostered. I know Jews who deplore non-white immigration and racial mixing, but I am not here to make excuses for the Jews. Let's not fool ourselves. If a few Jews denounce these things, it's not because their goal is to preserve our race. Perhaps there is a growing awareness among some Jews that a non-white dominated America might not bow in veneration to the chosen people, but instead bring about conditions that would be far worse than anything they experienced in either Europe or America, especially in light of the numerous anti-Jewish pronouncements made in recent years by some of Louis Farrakhan's lieutenants. Also, I suspect some Jews realize that the growing number of Asians might represent a group more difficult to deal with than whites. It is interesting to note that Jews have made few significant inroads in Asian nations. So, given these circumstances, should it surprise anyone that a few Jews are making their way into what they see as safe nationalist publications and organizations like Chronicles, American Renaissance, and others? But when I see large percentages of Jews prominent in such groups, alarm bells start going off in my head. They indicate to me that there is more afoot than just a few conservative Jews looking for cover amidst the multiracial chaos now permeating our society. It makes me suspect that there's a concerted effort by certain Jews to prevent any backlash against them for all the anti-white activities engaged in by organized Jewry over the past 50 years and more. If these Jews were really sincere and really wanted to fight for the preservation of America and America's founding race, then their energies would best be spent denouncing the activities of organized Jewry. But as far as I know, none of these Jews in the paleoconservative movement has uttered one peep against the anti-white activities of their fellows. Not much is said by them with regard to the Jewish domination of the Marxist movement and the destruction they have wrought. Not one word in exposing the Holocaust and the white collective guilt incurred by its promoters. And most important of all, no condemnation of the filth and anti-white subversion that has been and continues to be rammed into the public's mind by the Jewish-controlled news and entertainment media. No, we haven't heard much of anything from these good Jews on any of these important issues. Nonetheless, I have been recently informed that a Jewish speaker at last year's American Renaissance Conference, when cornered on this issue during a private conversation when the microphones were turned off, did admit that organized Jewry has been a driving force behind a multitude of anti-white operations for many years. Despite this discreet private admission, this same rabbi has never seen fit to reveal publicly this important fact. In view of these Jews' recent claims of supporting the white racialist movement, one might certainly be excused for asking, what better work could these Jews engage in other than enthusiastically exposing the destructive chicanery of the Jewish power structure? After all, who could attack a Jew as a Nazi or anti-Semitic for doing that? As far as I know, there has only been one Jew to do this with real energy and commitment, and his name was Benjamin H. Friedman. He exposed the activities of organized Jewry for all to see, and spent his fortune in the effort. He held nothing back as he exposed their lies and subversion. He depleted his wealth and sacrificed his reputation, exposing the anti-Western animus behind both Zionism and Communism, and he equally exposed the Jewish domination of the American media. While I assign considerable credibility to Benjamin Friedman, I hold in extreme suspicion those Jews now making their way into several branches of the patriotic movement. Many of them seem to be devoting their efforts to smearing, threatening, and purging so-called anti-Semites from patriotic groups. Jews agitating around the fringes of Second Amendment and militia groups are vehement in their frantic denunciation of all racists and openly hope that the gun owners will be shooting racists when the time is ripe. Beware, beware, beware. Most of the blame really falls at the feet of Patrick Buchanan and those like him for failing to recognize that Jewish interests do not coincide with our interests and for allowing themselves to be used while posing as the great white hope. But as I said before, as deplorable as these things may appear, they show that the feeling of nationalism and the pressure of an awakening white people is making itself felt in American politics. The Jewish power structure is still working feverishly to suppress it, but despite their best efforts, this racial attitude continues to grow and is resonating in the minds of more and more white Americans. So now, it is evidently the time for other measures, namely to corral potential white spokesmen or political candidates and render them impotent. Let them wail against the blacks, mestizos, liberalism, affirmative action, etc., etc. Just don't allow any criticism of the Jews. Even if such a kosherized white movement succeeded, very unlikely since the Jewish Fifth Column would be in a very good position to torpedo any impending success, and reestablished white America more or less as our forefathers intended it, the Jewish minority would still be a dangerous incubus on the body politic. Not because Jews espouse this particular creed or that. Creeds can be picked up and discarded with the ease with which one dons or doffs a mask. No, they cannot be allowed to lead us simply because they are not us, because they regard themselves correctly as a different people with their own interests. And when those interests conflict with ours, as they surely will, they will sacrifice us in an instant, as they have proven time and time again throughout our people's history. The next time you hear an ostensibly patriotic radio program or candidate, look carefully for the kosher symbol.
You are tuned to American Dissident Voices, an island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news. For a catalog of books, tapes, and videos that the censors of political correctness don't want you to see, just send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
Nothing is more important than beginning your patriotic education program today. Let me give you some suggestions for beginning it. Depending upon your means and inclination, you may want one or several of these books, tapes, and other materials. I recommend that you get them all, and we will be making a special discount combination offer to encourage you to do just that. First, there is our huge 217-page coffee table-size encyclopedic collection of all the best articles from our patriotic newspaper from over a 12-year period. It is entitled, The Best of Attack and National Vanguard. If you want to understand the forces that are destroying this country, and if you want to discover the only way out of the mess we are in, this book will enlighten you, as can no other. This book is an education in itself, and is the best bargain in our patriotic book catalog. This book is our radio offer number 4, and it is yours for $25. Next, there is one of the greatest speeches ever recorded by a great patriot and scholar and a master of the orator's art, Dr. Revelo P. Oliver, entitled, What We Owe Our Parasites. What We Owe Our Parasites will move you with its sweeping majesty, with its broad panorama of American history, and with its brilliant analysis of what it is about us which has made us such easy prey for our enemies. You will never see America in quite the same way again after hearing What We Owe Our Parasites. This tape is our radio offer number 7. And is yours for a gift of $13. Next, we offer you one of the greatest speeches of all time, Our Cause, by Dr. William Pierce. This is a speech which transcends the merely political and plumbs the foundations of life on Earth and the purpose of the existence of mankind in the universe. Dr. Pierce is the chairman of the leading patriotic organization in America today, the National Alliance, and has been a guest speaker many times on these microphones. Our Cause is his greatest and most profound speech. Hearing Our Cause is a life-changing experience. No understanding of the patriotic resistance is possible without the knowledge presented in this moving discourse. Our Cause is available to you as our radio offer number 11 for a gift of $13. Finally, we have the latest issue of our patriotic magazine, National Vanguard, which contains articles of current and vital interest on the unfolding plans of America's enemies to ensnare us in their so-called New World Order, and on many of the same issues we discuss here on American Dissident Voices. This latest issue we offer as our radio offer number 24 for $4. The total cost for these radio offers together, the book, Best of Attack and National Vanguard, the tape, What We Owe Our Parasites, the tape, Our Cause, and the latest issue of National Vanguard magazine, would normally be a minimum gift of $55. This week, however, to encourage you to educate yourself so that we can begin to take America back from those who have stolen her from us, we are making this special combination offer. All the radio offers above are yours. The huge book of our best past articles, the latest copy of our magazine, and 2 of the greatest patriotic speeches of all time. And all of these things, mind you, that you can't get in your local library or bookstore because of censorship. All of them are available to everyone who sends a gift this week of $45 or more to keep this truth-telling program on the air as our radio offer number 2. There is no more important thing that you can do for your nation, your family, and yourself than to take this first step. Right now, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, send $45 or more this week to National Vanguard Books. Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. And remember to ask for radio offer number 2. That's National Vanguard Books, Department R as in radio, P.O. Box 90, that's 90, Hillsboro, H-I-L-L-S-B-O-R-O, West Virginia, abbreviated WV, 24946, USA. Overseas listeners may pay with international reply coupons or an international postal money order. Today's program was produced by Ian McKinney and Kevin Alfred Strom. Remember to log on to our worldwide website of www.natvan.com. That's www.natvan.com, where hundreds of files, continuous transmission of this radio program, and an online version of the National Vanguard Books Catalog are all available. Until next time, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to never give up.